The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Hello and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. This is Richard Palmer standing in for your regular host, Mr. Stephen Flower, and we're coming to you once again from our campus in Edstone, England. Now I want to talk about a really important new subject that doesn't get enough attention, that I wasn't really thinking about too much, but what made me think about it was buying some used books on eBay. I think there were some history books I was buying for my daughter. Being the generous father that I am, the price came to somewhere around £3. But what caught my eye was, on checking out, PayPal made me an offer. If I wanted, I could borrow money to spread the cost of this purchase over several months. These days, we are being bombarded with so many offers of credit, and it's just become normal. I'd kind of stopped even noticing these kind of offers. But this one, you know, being offered to spread the cost of £3 worth of used books is so ridiculous. It caught my eye and got me thinking about this. Now, this particular type of lending, it's called point-of-sale lending, and it's just one of a whole range of ways that if getting in debt that is just becoming more and more common. You know, never has it been so easy to borrow money for just about anything than it is right now. And so never have we been in more debt than we are right now. I mean, you think about it. Like, first of all, okay, borrowing money for a house became common. Then borrowing money for a car, then borrowing money for large appliances through things like higher purchases. And then you had credit cards came along, and that allowed us to borrow money for anything and everything. Didn't matter what it is, you could put it on the credit card, albeit at a high rate of interest. Now you've got online sellers and shops and companies like PayPal and others offering us cheap credit for just about any purchase. Is it any wonder that we're swimming in more debt than any other time in history, really? I mean, the stats on consumer debt should be shocking. Let's just look at some statistics from the United States. So in America, mortgage debt is now at an all-time high. In the second quarter of 2019, it hit $9.4 trillion. So nearly $10 trillion US dollars. Now, mortgage debt last hit its peak in the autumn of 2008 at $9.3 trillion, and you had the infamous 2008 financial crisis hit soon after. So you've got mortgage debt all-time high. Well, auto loan debt, people borrowing money for cars, that's also at an all-time high. $1.3 trillion is the total figure for auto loan debt, and that is double the amount 10 years ago. Now, that part of that's because cars tend to be more expensive, but also because we want more expensive types of cars. SUVs are becoming, or sports utility vehicles, they're becoming more common. Car manufacturers are putting more bells and whistles into their cars, you know, computers and smart this and that and voice activation. It's pushing up the prices, but rather than, you know, they're pushing up the prices in response to consumers wanting to spend that money on all of those extra bells and whistles, wanting to borrow the money to pay for all those extra bells and whistles. And with these more expensive cars and with us buying things like sports utility vehicles that cost more, rather than, say, buying used or finding ways to afford it or to save money, we're just taking out longer car loans. Last week, the Wall Street Journal had a report where they looked at the 7-year car loans that are becoming common. And they talked about the fact that now many haven't paid off the loan from their old car when they go to buy the new one. So when they take out a new auto loan, they have to borrow money to pay off their old car debt and then to buy the new one. One third of new car buyers rolled debt into from an, their old car into their new loan. So we're just at an unsustainable level of debt when it comes to cars. You're also having this increasing story where lenders are foisting loans on people for cars that can't afford to pay them back. And I think it was actually a few years ago, I think I did a segment on this issue of rising subprime auto loans. There are people warning of a repetition of the subprime mortgage scandal, but this time in the auto loan market. This time with people being lent money to buy cars that they really just can't afford. Like I said, people have been warning for this. I think 4 or 5 years they've been saying we have a subprime car loan problem. But it's not gone away. Nobody's really put that much attention to it. Now, a subprime car problem isn't quite as bad as a subprime mortgage problem just because your mortgage debt is about $10 trillion, auto loan debt is about $1.3 trillion. Generally, if you have a subprime mortgage problem, it's a much bigger, there's just a whole lot more money involved in mortgages than in cars. But still, you're getting this rising trend now, almost every year, of people not being able to pay back their car, of rising repossessions when it comes to cars. And it's just one area of many where we're getting into more and more debt. Another level, another area of debt that set a new record is credit card spending. This hit $820 billion in 2018. And again, that was surpassing records set in 2008. The average American is about $600,000 in debt on their credit cards. An Ascent study of 1,000 credit cards or 1,000 credit card owners found that about 60% of these credit card owners had credit card debt, and about half had maxed out a credit card at some point. So a whole lot of people with credit card debt, and there's just been more and more studies. There's just this steady trickle. They come out every month or two. I see them. I put them in my folder of news articles where you get studies showing that, okay, like 40% of people couldn't cope with a sudden need to spend something like $400. I think that was the most recent one. And so their only option if there's a sudden unexpected cost is to put it on the credit card. And so you're seeing credit card debt ballooning. Student loans, those are another now major source of debt. Students owe a total of $1.6 trillion in student loans in just the United States. So this has become bigger now than auto loan debt and credit card debt. It's one of the fastest growing areas. Last year's graduates, or has been historically, I think it's been settling down a little in the last year or so, but last year's graduates owed an average of $29,200 for a bachelor's degree. So this is a growing level of debt, and it's a level of debt. I think part of the reason why it's growing, you look at all of these other levels of debt, and in general, people aren't encouraging people to go and rack up debt on their credit card. They're not encouraging them to rack up debt on an auto loan. But they, in general, people are encouraged to be more fiscally responsible in these areas. But then when it comes to student loans, well, this is where it's actually encouraged. Just about, you know, you'll be going, everything you do in school, you'll be told to go to university, to go to a good university, which in America tends to mean an expensive university. I don't want to get into the rights or wrongs or the financial disadvantage. I'm not a financial advisor, but my point is the system is designed to get people in debt at an early age. It's set up so that people borrow money, borrowing money becomes a normal part of life right from the start of your adult years. And they're encouraged to do that with a system that's set up to usher them straight into debt on a path for a lifetime of indebtedness, really. And this brings us to kind of the next big debt trap that I started about, point of sale loans. This is something that has just really started to take off. I mentioned PayPal's offer to lend me money to buy some books. But you're getting a host of companies now spreading through the market, companies like Afterpay, Affirm, Klarna, and they'll work with major retailers now to help you spread out the cost of your purchase. And then you've got some big companies getting ready to move in on the market, and I think we'll see more and more action as they start to get involved. In April, MasterCard bought a point-of-sale platform. I'll spell it for you. It's called VYZA. I don't know whether that's, I guess that'd be Visa. And then JP Morgan Chase, they're bringing out their own point of sale finance platform. Already, Americans owe around $400 billion in these type of loans. But really, a lot of the banks and experts think this is an area that's just getting started. A couple of years ago, Accenture forecast that point of sale market could be worth about $1.8 trillion. So we're talking about, you know, that's double the total level of credit card debt. So we're talking about opening up this brand new avenue for people to get in debt on these point of sale loans. And from the company's point of view, getting you to spend more, these point of sale loans are working. They are getting us to spend more, according to Forrester, companies that offer point-of-sale loans see a 32% increase in sales. So this is a way that's getting us to spend more. Now, we're not cutting back on all of these other areas. I mean, maybe the growth is being slowed, but credit card debt is an all-time high, mortgage debt all-time high, car loan debt all-time high. And now we've got another, even easier way to borrow money. And it's so kind of guilt-free almost. It doesn't really even feel like you're borrowing money with these point-of-sale loans. Instead, it's marketed as spreading the cost. So yeah, you feel like, well, I'm not getting in debt. I'm just paying off this purchase in 4, 5, 6. We hear a clip from one company where I think they said the average term is 11. I'm paying for this in 11-month installments. And depending on the service, sometimes you could be paying little or no interest. So it's just such an enticing way of getting in debt. And it does feel pretty affordable when you could be looking at something, maybe a big purchase, and you know, they break it all down for you, 0% interest, and maybe something like, well, £40 a month, and £40, oh, that doesn't sound like much. And it's not something I've gotten into, but I think you can really see the appeal of these loans. And I think that's why they're dangerous. It's a very easy, gentle path into debt. You're not having to go up to some scary bank manager or even bank website and apply for a personal loan. It's often right there. You know, I mentioned on eBay's website or just on whichever retailer that you're using. A lot of these companies that are coming out, they have apps. And it makes it nice and easy just to ease your way into debt. Spectator Life over the summer, they wrote, lured by the promise of buy now, but not in fact able to pay later, these products are changing the way consumers think about credit. And they prove that affluent customers aren't immune from the clutches of money lenders hungry to grab a bigger slice of the consumer credit card boom. And that article was commenting on how some of the people most affected by this new kind of point of sale debt are people earning more than $100,000 or £100,000. Sorry, it was a UK Spectator article. So even they're getting brought into this buy now, pay later. Here's a clip actually from CBS This Morning. I think it was in December 2008, where they interviewed one of the big players in this market and talked about this rising trend of point of sale loans. It's a little bit of a lengthy clip, I think a couple of minutes, but I think it's really interesting because I hadn't really thought too much about this subject until I saw that pop up on eBay, and it's a good introduction to this new way of easing people into debt. This is clip one.
You may notice a new way to pay online this holiday season, but it could cost you. Several tech companies, including Afterpay, Klarna, and Affirm, are offering point-of-sale loans or instant installment plans as an alternative to credit cards. You can apply online or on an app. Personal loan balances in America, which include this type of financing, more than doubled since 2014. They grew 5 times faster than credit card debt between the first quarter of 2017 and the same period this year. But consumer watchdogs are worried about who the loans are targeting. Tony DeCoppola is here to explain it all to us. Tony, good morning.
Good morning. Loans like this are approved in seconds, and you get the money immediately for the item you're buying, which sounds pretty good. And lenders say it's a responsible option. But with interest rates as high as 30%, critics see old-fashioned loan sharking with a Silicon Valley smile.
Whether you need a new watch, a new sweater, or the perfect decor for your holiday party, what you no longer need is money, not even a credit card, to make it yours.
What changed?
Buy now, pay later is the premise of the San Francisco-based Affirm, founded by Max Levchin in 2012.
How many people are doing this?
We've never really disclosed, but it's millions and millions. How's that?
And billions of dollars in
loans.
Loans outstanding.
Correct.
Demand is driven in large part by millennials, or Generation Z, many fearful of credit card debt. Affirm says because their payment plans have a predetermined interest rate with no compound interest or hidden fees, customers know exactly how much they'll pay each month for the product they purchase.
So we limit the transaction to a thing that you want to buy at a store, that you want to buy at a price you want to buy. And it creates financial certainty for our customers, especially the ones that really need it.
What's the average size of an Affirm loan?
$799.
And how long does it take to pay it off?
The typical term is about 11 months.
Levchin says the company uses its own formula to approve loans to a wider pool of people, including people with bad credit scores or no credit at all. Each purchase will show up as a separate loan on your credit report, and issues with the loan can quickly hurt your credit score.
So that's this new way of getting into debt with point-of-sale marketing. But if we're setting new records with all of these different categories of debt, in all of these new, in even inventing new ways to borrow money and make borrowing easier, why aren't we hearing about it? If we're busting up all records of debt, and I focused this morning on just consumer debt, but we're setting records in just about every level of debt. Corporate debt, stunning records. Government debt, stunning records. Local government debt, stunning records. I mean, we're borrowing about it. The U.S. government is borrowing about $1 trillion each year. That's growing the government debt by $1 trillion each year. They are shocking statistics, but nobody seems all that worried. I mean, I guess you do see the odd news report, and there's probably some talking head on TV that's getting up and saying, well, actually, these numbers are pretty scary. But nobody seems to be taking any action, or there's not a big, we see some of these, say, extinction rebellion protests, where you get thousands of people getting together and chaining themselves to lampposts or whatever and trying to shut down London. You don't see anything on that same scale talking about these just catastrophic levels of debt. Nobody's that concerned. Not that I'm advocating a massive protest trying to shut down London over the level of debt. My point is, this just doesn't seem like something that's that big on people's radar. Well, why not? Well, there's a rather kind of short-sighted view, but many don't really worry as debt hits record levels. They only start worrying or even panicking when we struggle to pay that debt off. And right now, we're not really struggling to pay that debt off. I think auto loans are the one big exception. And I think credit card debt, we've kind of gotten used to this baseline level where it just grows, but there's not necessarily this record, say, people defaulting where they just can't make their repayments. But that's because we've got some pretty unusual circumstances right now. I mean, interest rates are at record lows. For some level of debts, they're even negative. I spoke about that on the show a few weeks back, where banks will pay you to borrow money. And then you've got unemployment levels. They're at low levels that we haven't seen in decades. Lots of people are in jobs. That's not a situation that can last forever. As soon as interest rates rise, well, that's when all of these massive debts suddenly become really hard to pay back. That's when, if you've got a whole lot of debt, the interest rate only goes up a little. And then suddenly you're having to pay back $50, $100, $200 a month more. And when these debts are so high, well, that's enough to push some people into bankruptcy. The same with unemployment rates rise. When people start losing jobs, Well, then they can't afford to pay back all of these loans that they've taken out, and they start going bankrupt. And this can quickly spiral, because then as they lots of people start going bankrupt, well, then banks struggle, and they get into trouble, and so that causes more cutbacks and more unemployment and more people to lose their jobs and more people to not be able to pay these loans back and more banks to struggle. And you can very quickly get into a sticky situation. As soon as interest rates rise or unemployment rates rise, well, this record debt burden is going to become backbreaking. To sum up some of what we've covered, I just want to play another clip. This is a clip from an introductory called a documentary called Millennials and Debt, No Room to Maneuver. And it focuses on Canada, but it does a great job of summarizing just all the many ways we are enticing people into debt today. This is clip two.
You know, they go to university, they give them credit cards like they're candy. Like, you know, take this credit card, $1,000 each, right? You know, and they have like 20 credit cards. They just go, all the banks turn up, take a credit card.
You know, they get you right in college, right? That the banks get you right the first day you walk in on Frosh Week. There's five tables sitting there. It's the big five, right?
Back 20 years ago, you could get a part-time job or a full-time job during the summer. Save enough money, pay your tuition. Now with the high cost of tuition, you can't make enough money in the summer to do that. So you're having to supplement with your credit cards, or you're having to take on massive OSAP debts.
People have become more accepting of the idea that it's okay to carry debt. It's become more societally acceptable. And because people are growing up in an environment where it appears to be okay to have debt, they're not as afraid of it. And when you're not as afraid of it, you're not as wary of what you're borrowing. So when you're looking at a contract to sign for an installment loan from a payday loan company that's got a 49% interest rate on it, you're not scared to death of it, but you should be.
At one time, payday loans were very taboo things. They popped up, they were things that people knew not to have. So when I meet with an older person, they generally say, yeah, I should never went to the payday loan places. I know I was wrong. I didn't have it. With the younger generation, I'm finding is it's acceptance. This is just what them and their friends do.
So we are just drowning ourselves in debt in so many different ways. And that's, like I said, this is the foundation of our economy. All of our prosperity is kind of driven by spending, and spending is all driven by debt. Our whole economic system is built on this and on encouraging more debt. And that's why we're just finding all of these different ways to encourage more and more and more borrowing. It could be scary to think about how unstable our economy is, how it could all fall apart so easily. But there is a real solution. There is even a whole lot of hope in this story. I want to take a quick break now. We've just exposed the scale of debt. And again, we're just looking at one area, consumer debt, and the way that our economy is just absolutely saturated with it. But I want to come back after the break and talk about the real solution to this subject, some positive, soon-coming news on global prosperity. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. To those who followed the broadcasts and writings of Herbert W. Armstrong throughout his long ministry, and who still remember, World Events Today are an electrifying endorsement of the power of biblical revelation. Much of Mr. Armstrong's forecasting was proven accurate within his own lifetime. But since his death in 1986, events are proving him right all the more. For a comprehensive review of Mr. Armstrong's analysis, request our free booklet, He Was Right. He Was Right summarizes many of the Bible-based prophecies Mr. Armstrong proclaimed for more than 50 years. This booklet takes you back to the spiritual roots of the Philadelphia Church of God and the Trumpet magazine. to assemble the material in this booklet, our staff looked back through decades of old plain truth issues, looking for Mr. Armstrong's bold predictions. We then matched those prophetic statements with what actually happened or is now happening on the world scene. The result was amazing. The sheer number of prophetic statements made by Mr. Armstrong and his editorial team and their accuracy will astound you. The world may scoff, but Herbert Armstrong was right. Just how right is daily becoming apparent as we teeter on the brink of catastrophic global events that will lead to the greatest geopolitical intervention of all time, the return of Jesus Christ to this war-torn, war-weary earth. To order our free booklet, email your request to td@kpcg.fm. This is KPCG-FM, and this is The Trumpet Daily.
Welcome back to The Trumpet Daily radio show. This is Richard Palmer standing in for your regular host, Mr. Stephen Flurry. And we spent the first half of the program looking at the record consumer debt levels, why and how we're finding more and more different ways to borrow money and get in debt. We live in a world founded on debt. But what is the solution? And people have put forward all kinds of solutions, ranging from things that are just tweaks to the current system, maybe changing interest rate policies a little, or tweaking tax rates, tinkering with how we manage our financial system, to full-scale revolution. You see people talking about, well, embracing communism, which talks about a model where there's just not even any property ownership, and fundamentally changing the way we even think about money and our relationships with each other. Well, what is the real solution, though? Well, the Bible tells us. The Bible gives us the answer to this. And it is a pretty radical solution. It doesn't abolish property ownership. It doesn't mean embracing communism. But, you know, man's ways are clearly not working. And at this point, I think it should be obvious when you see that we've just reached this point where we have to just invent more and more ways to borrow money to keep the economy going. It's going to lead to a catastrophic collapse that's going to prove beyond all possible doubt that this system does not and cannot work in the long run. So what man's come up with, and I think when you look at history, you can definitely see that what we've got at the moment and this kind of system of free market capitalism is the best system that man has come up with. It's done the most to bring people out of poverty and to allow people to live in freedom, to not have some massive central government deciding every aspect of people's lives for them. But even that has brought us to this place where we've just got to invent more and more ways of getting in debt to keep us going. So surely looking at the ways that man's ideas have brought us, or the point man's ideas have brought us to, and the way where his system has brought us to, surely we should be willing to look at what the Bible has to say. The Bible's solution. And the Bible has a whole lot to say about a time of coming prosperity. Now, this is something Herbert W. Armstrong, the founder, the editor-in-chief of The Plain Truth, the predecessor of The Trumpet, the magazine behind The Trumpet Daily radio show, he had a whole lot to say about this time of coming prosperity. You know, his radio show was called The World Tomorrow. And that, you know, that phrase, World Tomorrow, it's talking about this biblical time, of soon coming biblical time, of peace and prosperity over the whole earth. I'll play a clip from the World Tomorrow broadcast now. Again, this is a little bit of a longer clip, but it's just great to hear from Mr. Armstrong. You know, this is the message that from the Bible that he brought to millions of people around the world. We'll listen to him sum that up, and then we'll get into some of these scriptures talking about the biblical solution to this problem, the real biblical foundation for a stable, prosperous economy for all. But this is clip three.
And yet we are going to have prosperity universally. We're going to have happiness and peace because your Bible says there is a time coming and very soon that this generation is going to live into when this whole earth will be as full of the knowledge of God, which means of the knowledge of the way to peace, the way to success, the way to happiness, as the ocean beds are full of water. Now that's pretty full of right knowledge. And when we come to that kind of knowledge, well, knowledge is the direction, the education that tells you the way to get what you want. Now, what we want is all right. We all want to enjoy life. That's all right. We all want peace. We all want happiness. We all want a full, abundant life that is interesting and perhaps even supplied with a few thrills along the way. And there's nothing wrong with that as long as they're the right kind. And we're all going to have it. And before this generation has passed on, that's pretty shocking. Happily, that's true. Now, listen, if one would really use his mind in thinking, he would ask, well, why doesn't the gospel point the way and accomplish this result? My friends, the gospel, the true gospel does. That gospel is in your Bible. You'll find it in the books of Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. You'll find it in the Acts of the Apostles. You'll find it in all of the epistles or the letters of the Apostle Paul. You'll find it in the book written by Peter. You'll find it in the letters of John and in Jude. You'll even find it in the book of Revelation.
So that was Mr. Armstrong talking about this soon coming time of prosperity. In his book, The Wonderful World Tomorrow, he wrote, "And yet absolute utopia is soon going to grip this earth in our time, and we shall see world peace. We shall see sickness banished, vigorous health restored, ignorance replaced with universal right education, poverty replaced with universal prosperity, weeping and wailing turned into happiness and joy. Incredible, he asked. Why should it be? Why should it be incredible? I mean, we can see from the Bible, God wants us to be, he wants his people to be prosperous. 3 John 1 and verse 2, there's only one chapter in 3 John. And it says, "Beloved, I wish above all things that you may prosper and be in health, even as your soul prospers." You know, God doesn't want a world full of debt, where people are just enslaving themselves to these massive debt burdens, mortgaging their future. He doesn't want a world where there's a third world, where people live in horrible poverty-stricken conditions with rampant sickness, partly because they can't even afford proper sanitation. That's not the world as God intended it, and he has a plan to change that. He has a new world that he's planning to bring about. And we can look in Micah chapter 4, just a wonderful picture of this new world that God promises laid out here. And you just see the prosperity that's on display. Here, Micah 4 and verse 4, and it says, "And they shall sit every man under his vine and under his fig tree, and none shall make them afraid, for the mouth of the Eternal of Hosts hath spoken it." So you've got universal property ownership, not universal communism. And everyone's got a decent space, a decent house, a decent space to live. A standard of living far above what we have for most people today. And everyone's got their own beautiful environment. They've got enough to have their own vine, their own fig tree, their own property, not mortgage property, not somebody else's property that they're renting. So you have this time of individual level prosperity all over the earth. Other Bible verses talk about this. Isaiah chapter 60 talks about this time. In verse 5 it says, "And you shall see and flow together, and your heart shall fear and be enlarged, because the abundance of the sea shall be converted unto you." And the forces, or the translation, the margin, the Gentile there, or the comment in the margin there is the wealth of the Gentiles shall come unto you. And Mr. Armstrong, in his book, The Wonderful World Tomorrow, talks about, well, you know, it says the abundance of the sea. It's talking about the world's gold and silver reserves, mostly under the sea. And he goes into that, in that book, he talks about some of the huge wealth that's currently locked under the ocean. And you look at some of these verses and others, and God's going to make those available to mankind. If we look in Amos, there's another scripture describing this kind of super abundance in this coming world tomorrow. Amos chapter 9. And verse 13 says, "And the day shall come, says the Eternal, that the plowman shall overtake the reaper, and the treader of grapes him that sows seed, and the mountains shall drop the sweet wine, and the hills shall melt." So there's so much abundance coming from the fields that they haven't finished harvesting one harvest before it's time to go and get out there and sow the next harvest. Just a vivid picture of this superabundance. Jeremiah chapter 31 also talks about this. Jeremiah chapter 31 and verse 12 says, "Therefore they shall come and sing in the heights of Zion, and shall flow together to the goodness of the Eternal, for wheat and for wine, for oil, for the young of the flock and of the herd. Their soul shall be as a watered garden. They shall not sorrow any more." So you have this superabundance, but then as this verse brings out, you know, when we're talking about universal prosperity, this is just a small part of the blessings that God promises to give, to bring in the world tomorrow. You know, you could bring universal prosperity, but still have plenty of sorrow. But here God says, well, they shall not sorrow anymore. There's going to be no more unhappiness. The Bible talks about deserts being fertile and the waste regions of the earth becoming prosperous and planted. We can look at that as well, just quickly, just one verse, because there's a great many that talk about this in Isaiah chapter 41. Well, Isaiah 41 talks about threshing away the mountain, God making a threshing implement to thresh away the mountains. So just transforming the earth's environment, turning these areas that are barren and maybe mountainous, threshing them down so that you can sow seeds and bring in crops and make the whole earth more prosperous. In verse 17, it says, "When the poor and needy water and there is none, and their tongue fails for thirst, I, the Eternal, will hear them. I, the God of Israel, will not forsake them. I will open rivers in high places and fountains in the midst of valleys. I will make the wilderness a pool of water and the dry land springs of water. I will plant in the wilderness the cedar and the shittah tree and the myrtle and the olive and the oil tree. And I will set in the desert the fir tree and the pine tree and the box tree together, that they may see and know and consider and understand together that the hand of the Eternal has done this, and the Holy One of Israel has created it." So just abundance being brought about all over the earth, even in deserts. In the Wonderful World Tomorrow booklet, Mr. Armstrong writes, "Can you imagine such a fabulous scene? Deserts becoming green, fertile, garden lands of trees, shrubs, bubbling springs and brooks, mountains brought low and made inhabitable." And as I said, these are just part of the blessings. You know, God talks about there being no more diseases and sicknesses. And we spend masses on healthcare today. You know, in America, there's trillions spent. I can't remember the figures on the amount spent per person. I mean, over here in the UK, it's probably the lion's share of our taxes going towards the National Health Service. But instead, God promises to miraculously heal. We can read a verse about that. It's just a few verses over in Isaiah chapter 35. Isaiah 35 and verse 6 says, "Then shall the lame man leap as a hart, and the tongue of the dumb shall sing. For in the wilderness shall waters break out and streams in the desert, and the parched ground shall become a pool, and the thirsty land springs of water. In the habitation of dragons or jackals, where each lay shall be grasses with reeds and rushes." And so talking about, again, this transformation that will be taking over the whole earth. God talks about great prosperity being brought to Jerusalem, his capital city during this time. Well, Mr. Armstrong describes this coming wonderful world tomorrow economy in his book, The Wonderful World Tomorrow. And I'll read a fair bit, but it's just, you know, it fits our subject today with looking at the man's financial system so perfectly. Mr. Armstrong writes that God's treasure will be for public display. No gold bricks reposing in deep subterranean vaults, utterly useless except for their meaning. No thievery or robbery, but breathtakingly beautiful decorations for the capital building, the temple, in which Christ will dwell. He talks about the gold standard being set up. I think elsewhere he talked about a fixed standard being set up. Values will never change. He writes, no more speculating or gambling on other people's ability. Never again will any person become rich from investing in the labors and creative ability of another person. No more stock markets, world banks, financing centers, insurance companies, mortgage companies, loan agencies, or time payments. It's a new system. And it's a system not based on debt. Mr. Armstrong writes, in God's abundant government, people will buy only what they need, when they can afford it, when they have cash to pay for it. No more interest and no more taxes. He writes, but the tithing system will be universal. He talks about the massive levels of taxes in today's society. You know, I think if you sat down and worked it all out in the UK, they're very good at hiding the taxes, but I bet it would come to at least 50% when the employer's contribution to national insurance, which is basically a tax on your paycheck that comes out of the money before you even see the figure written down. And then there's your contribution to national insurance and the bank, and then the actual tax that's taken out. And then there's 20% value added tax on everything that you buy, and then extra tax on petrol and things like that. I'm sure if you added it up, tax on energies and green rebate taxes and all these kind of things, it would come to at least 50%. But Mr. Armstrong writes, God only requires 10%. That's what he writes about in the Bible, a 10% tithe. And out of that 10% will be financed the entire governmental, educational, and spiritual leadership of the whole earth. He talks about how this is going to be a great blessing. There'll be none of the financial burdens that curse most people today, Mr. Armstrong writes. And that's what we see with man's financial system. It puts burdens on people. It entraps them. It entices them. And we make it so easy to get into debt. So enticing to get into debt. Hey, you can have this new thing and you just have to pay $20 a month, $40 a month. You can afford that. But it's a curse. It's a burden. And we're enticing people to take on these financial burdens. Mr. Armstrong writes, people will not then try to keep up with the Joneses, so they will not try to live beyond their means. They will be educated to resist impulse buying and lustful acquisition of various gadgets, toys, playthings, and luxury items they can't afford and don't need. Take the commercialism of various holidays away, expose the true origin of pagan holidays, and people would have more money for the essentials of life that really count. And that's true. It's always shocking to me just how much of all of our economy is driven, or is built around man's holidays, especially Christmas. So much credit card debt comes from Christmas purchases that get piled on the credit card, and then people are still often paying that off, in many cases, when the next Christmas rolls around. And you look at a whole lot of retail businesses, especially ones that are thing toys and entertainment, they don't make money for 10 months of the year, and it's just Christmas and the run-up to Christmas that they actually make a profit. Now, I guess that might be a little different in the US, where there's things like the Black Friday sales. My knowledge of this subject comes more from the UK. But for a whole lot of businesses, they only make money in the run-up to Christmas, and the rest of the time, it's just ticking over, waiting until they can get that time where there's that massive splurge of spending around the pagan holidays there at the end of the year with Christmas. Mr. Armstrong writes, reduce the really big expenses in most people's homes. Take away all the taxes, real and hidden. Take away property taxes, school taxes, and all other taxes, since God will be taking care of all the education then. Cut down on any medical bills medical bills. And then Mr. Armstrong writes in brackets, only small fees for first aid or child delivery or other necessary physical helps. And ensure no one ever again signs a 36-month contract at up to 35 or 40% interest on an ancient used car that falls apart while the buyer still owes more than the car is worth. Do these things and the financial curses under which most people live will be healed. God says financial blessings are to become the order of the day. That's where we're heading. Take away thievery, robbery, accidents, weather damage, rust, rot and decay from plants, stores, manufacturing concerns. How much less could merchandise then sell for, and at how much greater profit? Take away weather problems, insect damage, blights and fungus from farmers, losses through government price controls and overflooding of the market. What would there be their lot in life? Take away massive assembly line productions of cheap, flimsy automobiles. And what would that do to solve traffic snarls and smog problems and collisions and loss of life and the whole social and economic picture? God will accomplish these things. But then Mr. Armstrong talks about the subject that I raised at the beginning. How? How is this possible? What is it that God is going to change to bring about this new system? Why is it that we don't have this situation today? Well, Mr. Armstrong writes, first, by changing the nature of human beings, changing their outlook toward life, removing their lust and selfishness, their covetousness and greed that drives them onwards towards material goals. And how will this be done? By putting away the super powerful Satan, the prince of the power of the air, the spirit being that now works and deceive misled human beings. And Mr. Armstrong is quote paraphrasing there Ephesians 2 and verse 2. Satan, he writes, is the source of what is called human nature, which humans acquired from him. And he's going to be put away. Revelation chapter 20 talks about that time, the biblical Feast of Atonement that's mentioned in the Old and the New Testament, pictures that time when he'll be put away. James 4 and verse 5 says, do you think the scripture says in vain, the spirit that dwells in us lusts to envy? You know, that's the nature that we all have in us. It lusts to envy. Jeremiah 17 and verse 9 says, the heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. Who can know it? That's the nature we all have. Mr. Armstrong writes, human nature covets. It lusts for the things that money can buy. It lusts for prestige, recognition, admiration, and popularity. It lusts for power, position, and wealth. And he talks about how we all lust for the things that money can buy. And the Bible talks about being content with what we have, not always lusting for more. And instead trusting in, and then, well, Mr. Armstrong goes through Matthew chapter 6, talking about lay not up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth does rust and does corrupt, and where thieves break through and steal, but lay up for yourselves treasure in heaven. And Mr. Armstrong, he goes through some of these passages, and he says, notice it's not a sin to be rich, but it is a sin to covet riches, or to put your heart on material things. And that's so saturated within everything in our economy. I mean, we have entire businesses, huge businesses, billion-dollar or more businesses that are all built around understanding the human mind and human psychology so that they can get you to want something, so that they can get you to lust, get you to covet, so that you go and spend money. And then you have whole industries like we've talked about, making it as easy as possible for you to borrow money, to snare you in debt, so that you can get those things. Everything's built around get. We get individually. We have the businesses persuading us and preying on that aspect of human nature. Banks that are preying on that aspect of human nature. And like I said, I don't want to absolve individuals of all of blame in that either. But God in this new world is going to change that. There'll be a new spirit in human beings. Or a new attitude, I should say. A new nature. Mr. Armstrong writes that in God's kingdom, these commands of the way of give will be obeyed. They'll become the standard for regulating commerce, business, finance, and the entire economic structure of the world. A new economy. And it will all be on the giving basis. In Luke 6, verse 38, Christ says, give, and it shall be given unto you. Good measure pressed down and shaken over and running over shall men give into your bosom. For the same measure that you meet with all, it shall be measured unto you. So you'll have this whole economy based on giving. And that'll be fundamental to this time of universal prosperity and this time of universal happiness. You know, people living the give way of life. That's why there's no sorrow. God is there to teach and to educate and bring people into this way of life. But if we were just given universal prosperity without God's help, without God teaching us, without bringing in the way of give over all the world, you wouldn't get rid of sorrow and suffering. Mr. Armstrong writes, it would require a thick book to describe the wonderful conditions which could prevail on this earth and which will finally prevail when the human heart is humbled and converted and given the very nature of God. And he references 2 Peter 1 and verse 4. Never again will anyone build a building he can't afford and doesn't need to lease and rent to tenants who'll help him pay for it. No more interest. God says it is a sin to lend money at usury or interest. Once each 50 years, all debts and public and private will be cancelled completely. Since all governments will be in the hands of the spiritual family of God and partly administered by those human leaders directly under God, and since there'll be no huge bureaus watching other huge bureaus which are spontaneously watching other bureaus, there'll be no military establishments, no intelligence or spy agencies, or huge cartels, monopolies, unions, giant government spending. The economy, writes Mr. Armstrong, of the world will be healed. And he just talks about more of all the different ways we waste money today. But instead, they'll all be in a sound financial condition. It will be a world of great prosperity. Just play one more clip from Mr. Armstrong's radio show, where the World Tomorrow program, where he talks about this. Again, just to hear from his own words on this coming time of prosperity one more time. This is clip 4.
We've got to be punished first to learn a lesson so we can be happy. And my friends, we're going to have greater material prosperity than we have now. But we're going to know how to enjoy it. And we're going to have health. And we're going to feel good all the time. We're going to do those things that keep our minds clear and our bodies healthy. And oh, how good it's going to be alive.
So this is the time throughout the Bible that God says is coming soon. It's also the time that we're looking forward to right now. It's why I'm coming to you as a recording, not live today on the Trumpet Daily radio show. I'm recording this, I guess, about a week or so in advance because we're keeping the festival of the Feast of Tabernacles, or what the Jews call Sukkot, you know, that time that's talked about in the Old and the New Testament, this seven-day festival with an eighth day on the end, a last great day, but these 7 days looking forward to this wonderful time of peace and prosperity. You know, God wants us to fill our minds with this, so much so that he sets aside this fairly lengthy holiday to get us focused on this time. And he has us save up 10% of our income to spend during these 7 days so that we can live in prosperity, so that we have that prosperity to give and serve and help others as well, so we can look forward to and picture and play out that wonderful world tomorrow, that soon coming time. It's a wonderfully positive message that God has here. He is going to fix he's not going to fix this financial system, but he is going to bring about a new financial system full of prosperity that is just unimaginable by today's standards. This world's financial system is broken. But right now, we're looking forward to a new financial system that God is bringing based on a new way of life, a give way of life. I guess it's a new way of life to this world, but one that God's been living from the beginning. God is going to bring about this new world with real prosperity. And you can prove that from your Bible. You can build a really solid foundation on this hope. There are so many scriptures that talk about it, and we just looked at the tip of the iceberg today. And if this is new to you, if you haven't heard about this before, I'd really urge you, go on our website, thetrumpet.com, click on the literature tab at the top there, and get our free booklet, The Wonderful World Tomorrow, by Herbert W. Armstrong. The Wonderful World Tomorrow, What It Will Be Like. If you go up there and change where it says Showcase, go to All, and you should be able to find that booklet on our website. And we're more than happy to send that to you anywhere in the world. And that's full of scriptures. You can take that and really prove this subject to yourself and have this sure foundation. Know that this world of prosperity is coming and that God does have a solution to everyone's financial troubles. And he's going to bring about a new world economy. So please, if you've not read that booklet before, go order that or read that online at our website, thetrumpet.com. If you have any comments, feedback, any questions, you can shoot us an email at td@kpcg.fm. And please stay tuned here on 101.3 on the FM dial or at KPC in Edmond, Oklahoma, or at kpcg.fm. And we'll be back with, as this is a recording, I'm not sure quite what, but we'll be back with something tomorrow.